The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcast Network. For advertising information or to find more great podcasts, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com and follow us on Twitter at @RealTheUnderdog.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of the Functional Sportsaholic, or as we'd like to call it, the Sports Talk Revolution. We are proud partners of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. You can also find us on Podcast One. You are listening, as usual, to Sean Ryan and Sam Van Dam. Sam, what's going on, man?
What up, bro? Just trying to get through this this work week.
Yeah, I hear you. Me too, actually, because I got laid off, so I'm just trying to get through. I shouldn't call it a work week. I said, you know, why are you cut my job? Why are you doing this? And he was like, dude, you're freaking podcasting the whole time. Why would we keep? Nah, I'm just kidding on that. No. It's one of those things. So, I'm going to be a free agent. I'm going to be doing some freelance stuff. Really, I think I'm just going to chill. Thankfully, I'm at a point where I can just kind of chill out in my day life, so I'm going to chill for a little bit and then get back into the corporate grind a little bit later when I feel like it. But anyway, quickly before we get rolling here, a couple things. I am at @TFS_Sean, that's S-E-A-N on Twitter. Sam is at @TFS_SamVanDam on Twitter. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm @TFS_Sean there as well. So my Instagram and my Twitter handles are the same. If you could give us a like, if you listen to the show, if you give us a like and leave us a comment, we would appreciate that. That always helps. Something weird happened with iTunes. I don't know what's going on. We have two listings. And one of them, I think it's basically affecting us in the rankings. So if you like the show, even if you've liked us before, if you could give us another like, I think that's going to help us out. Sam. So, I'm going to be chilling out over the next couple months here. I've resolved myself basically to not get a job again until August. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that's a great plan. If you can do it, get some books done, get some pod work done, get some housework done, you know, get yourself well again. I know you've been sick pretty much all of 2019. So yep. I know you're coming down to the Florida next week. So I think it'll be good, man.
Yeah, you're right, man. I'm sick. So I'm sick again. I was on antibiotics last week when we were talking. I got off antibiotics and I got sick immediately after that. So I think I feel the worst that I felt this week. We delayed our recording. We usually record on Wednesday, so we're recording this one on Thursday because I didn't feel good yesterday. We should have just recorded it yesterday because I feel worse today. But and I'm driving my family down from Chicago to Orlando on Saturday if I feel up to it, which I think I will, but not looking forward to it. And you're going to Costa Rica, right, buddy?
I am going to Costa Rica. I leave Saturday morning, and I will be off the grid for a good week.
Yeah, I think we're going to have Brad from the Get Paid Podcast fill in here, and then we're going to have Eric, the Baseball Llama, my co-author from the 2019 Fantasy Baseball Almanac and Draft Guide, will be on Get Paid to talk probably a little bit more about fantasy baseball in that episode. But let's just go ahead and dig in, man. BovadaSportsBook.com, just to remind everybody, they have all the celebrity contest. I'm following Snoop Dogg, but if you vote, you can win a quick 100, which is always good. $100 of free cash. Hey man, I need it. so
yeah. I mean, who doesn't? I mean, at this point, who doesn't, man? Well, I'll take a hundo any day.
Yeah. Nah, man. But I know that you weren't watching because you're superstitious about the things. But that Duke UCF game, man.
I think I snapped at you and I said I'm not watching the game.
Yeah. Well, I figured
I did go back and watch it.
Yeah. Okay.
But I did not watch it. I did not watch it live.
I was surprised to hear that, but it's a superstitious thing. Is that it? Like, you just don't watch the games live?
Yeah, well, it's because Duke has lost early a few times, and I've always, like, either taken off work or done something to watch it. And Lehigh and Mercer are a couple that, you know, jump out at me. So now I don't watch any game until at least the Sweet 16. Right. And I definitely wasn't going to watch because it was UCF, and I blocked about four people from texting me because people were giving me crap when like, you know, 5 minutes into the game. And I was
in true Orlando sports fan fashion, I'm sure they were jumping down your throat all game and talking smack. And then they were probably disappeared at the end when they missed the tip in, right?
Right. Yeah.
Disappeared off the face of the earth, and then maybe they're complaining about a foul. I saw somebody.
Oh, it's been a lot of it, and I put the fouls up, and I was like,
dude, they were obviously fouls. It's not just the Orlando fan base; it's everybody. It's like, can you just be objective about anything in your life? Like, just because you root for a team, does that mean you have to get every single 50-50 call? And let's be honest about this. Taco Fall in the first half took some of the worst fouls that I've ever seen in a basketball game. Like, I don't take fouls that bad on the court. Like, when I go play, like, you know, I mean, those were horrendous fouls from such a key person in their scheme. Look, man, if you want to blame somebody, blame yourself, man. And like, hey, box out on the free throw. Box out.
Yeah.
Give me a break. And I mean, that's, again, another true Orlando fashion. Snatching, as I said to Brad and get paid this past week, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. That's, you know, the Nick Anderson stuff in the finals. Any way that you can lose in Orlando, you're going to lose. So I don't know why these people are so freaking surprised that this happened. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and they also shot 8 more free throws than Duke did. Your game right there. You know, so, I mean, for everyone complaining about fouls, you shot 8 more free throws than Duke. You shot 8 more. You know, that's the way that's the way it goes sometimes, man.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole nation was pulling for UCF. It's not like it was just, you know, again, Duke biased. It was, they choked up some last minute possessions. Mm-hmm. They were up 2, they tried to come down and run a 2-on-1, throw an alley-oop. They should have pulled that ball out. You know, it's just games come down. It doesn't come down to a last play. It's a whole game is wound up in one thing, and you can't just start picking it apart.
Yeah, and, you know, Brad and I were talking a little bit about the matchup itself, and, you know, we were just kind of talking about just at a high level, and I made the comment to you is, you know, I really underestimated, you know, or just didn't even take into account the Dawkins factor. Like, this was a game, in my opinion, and I think that's probably what you were alluding to with the Sweet 16 stuff. This is a perfect trap game for Duke.
Right.
You know, this is a team where UCF, you know, they are a little underrated in terms of, maybe not underrated, maybe that's not the right word, but they're easy to look over, right? They're not in one of the power conferences, but they have some good talent. They're a well-coached team, and they have a chip on their shoulder.
Right.
So for Duke, you know, you're in the 32 at that point. You're kind of looking ahead. You're ready to. You're mentally. You're already in the Sweet 16. Like, you're 1-9. You're the number one overall seed, and you're playing like a smaller conference. So you think you're going to get past that game? I think that was like mentally for the Duke players. I think they just assumed that they were going to probably, you know, be up by like 10 the whole game, and it wasn't going to really be. Well, they got punched in the face to begin the game. Then they came back and they went on a run and they were up, and I figured the game was over at that point, but then UCF rebounded. I mean, they showed, you know, a lot of courage and a lot of fight there. But another thing that they had going for them is that Dawkins, like, Krzyzewski is such a great coach. He outcoaches teams quite a lot, right? But his coaching style, Dawkins knows coaching style. He's been around it for like 30 years or something. So there aren't going to be any like surprises from Krzyzewski that Dawkins isn't going to be ready for. And so like, I'm sure that this UCF team was as prepared to face a Duke system as anybody will be in this tournament.
Yeah.
Just by nature of that relationship. And so to me, like, the game was going to come down to, you know, talent versus talent. But I think I underestimated even, you know, the you know, Dawkins, the younger Dawkins on the court was fantastic. He should have made that last tip in. Oh, well, it rimmed out. But I mean, he was fantastic. If Taco Fall didn't get into foul trouble early with those stupid fouls, I actually think they would have won the game. But, you know, it happened. So it happened, you know?
Yeah. And the thing was, I also, you know, I really didn't want to watch the game because I knew UCF was going to be tough out for Duke, because two things Duke doesn't do really well when they play an older team and they play a really tall team. They have issues, especially with the older team, you know, because Duke starts 4 freshmen. Mm-hmm. They only go about 7 deep. And most of those guys, you know, the oldest they play is a junior, who doesn't play a ton. I knew Dawkins was coaching, and I said, if there's any team, you know, that is ready to play Duke, it's going to be UCF. And even when they were in the same bracket when it first came out on Selection Sunday, I was like, I didn't let on that it worried me as much as it did, but it wouldn't surprise me if Duke won the next game, you know, by 20.
Right.
You know, it just because I think this was such a big hurdle for them to get over. And even though it's UCF and it's not a Power Five conference or anything like that, they have some good players. They have a really, you know, a freakishly different player than they're not used to playing against. And truthfully, they should have won the game.
Yeah.
UCF should have won.
Yep. Yeah. And
Coach K said as much. Coach K like was in tears basically afterwards. He was like, I feel so bad for Johnny and UCF because those players deserve to win. You know, that's just where you see talent at the end kind of be able to keep Duke in the game and ultimately win the game.
Yep. Yep. I mean, so it happens. And that you touched on another side of it, too, is, you know, that coming into, I think, Monday, you know, I was at the gym before I got the plague again. I was at the gym. Oh, but speaking of, man, so, like, I always know when I'm getting sick because usually I'll show up on Monday and, you know, maybe I'll have had some cocktails or something, you know, during the weekend and I'm kind of trying to sweat all that stuff out. Uh-huh. But, you know, so Mondays are always a little bit rough, but I know when I'm getting sick because if I come in on Monday and do, like, a run or something like that, how my body reacts the rest of the day. As soon as I got off the treadmill, like I was just fighting to stay awake, you know? And so like, I was like trying to stay awake. I had coffee, like I could not stay awake. And so finally I fell asleep, and took a nap in the middle of the day. And you wonder why I got laid off, right? Took a nap in the middle of the day. And I'm just joking here. But yeah. I took a nap and I was like sweating like crazy. I felt lightheaded. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I guess I'm getting sick again. And sure enough, like the next day, the sore throat came in and all that. But anyway, while I was at the gym, I was watching TV. And, you know, they usually play at the time I'm at the gym there. I usually see some reruns of Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith. And they're always talking about something stupid and taking a dumb angle, but that's kind of what you have to do, I guess, in today's.
Right.
Outside of this show, everybody else does it stupid shit. But anyway, one of the angles they were taking was that, you know, Duke is going to get bounced in the next round because, you know, the UCF. Again, people, you're paying attention to the wrong things. Yeah, UCF is in a non-Power 5 conference, but listen, they have underrated talent, nationally speaking, underrated talent. Like people overlook them. Houston's no slouch. I mean, Houston's still, the Bovada odds have them as one of the kind of middle of the pack teams to win the NCAA. So yeah, Houston and UCF beat Houston. You have Cincinnati in there. I mean, that's not a bad conference. It really isn't. And I would say actually that conference is probably better in the NCAA basketball than it is in football. Top to bottom in terms of talent and being able to beat big teams. But, you know, like you're looking at the wrong thing. Like Dawkins had, like you said, Sam, I mean, he's going to have this team ready to go and Krzyzewski's not going to be able to fool him or pull any punches with him because it's just, you know, there's just familiarity. And you see that all over sports. Like, you know, like in the NFL, when the defensive coordinator, like Bill Belichick used to own Bill Parcells. Now we know that Sam, you and I, we always say Bill Belichick is the greatest head coach of all time. So maybe that's not the best example, but you'll see that like a coordinator will get an NFL job and then he'll come back and he'll beat, you know, this vaunted head coach because you know what to expect. You know the players, you know the system, you know all this stuff, you know what the X's and O's are going to be. So it's, I don't know, you know, people are overreacting. I guess, you know, it fills airtime, but it's just kind of a dumb argument to me.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. It's time to move on. Move on with it.
We're on to the Sweet 16, as Bill Belichick would say. We're on to the Sweet 16. I can't even do the, because my throat's sore, I can't even do the impersonation.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. I was looking again, I was checking Bovada right before this recording just to look and see how the odds have shaken up. And Duke is still a very wide favorite. I thought it was funny that Gonzaga is still, I mean, I guess, right? Gonzaga is still holding on as like the second. They're at like plus 475. And you have a group of people. If I'm guessing, I still like my finals prediction, which is North Carolina versus Michigan. But I'll be honest with you. I just picked Michigan to be a little bit contrary because, you know, I still think probably North Carolina and Duke is the most likely. But yeah, man, I like Michigan. Michigan's at plus 1,800, and I think Carolina's at like plus 9. I think I wrote it down. I didn't. What a goof. I think they're at like plus 975 or something like that. But and Duke is around like plus 220, 275, somewhere around there. But what do you think, man? You still thinking Duke, North Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, you never know, but you know, I'm gonna stick with my original guns because I'm not a flaker. So I will stick with my one and only bracket. You guys all have like eight brackets, and I'm gonna stick with my one and only bracket, and gonna stick with my Duke North Carolina matchup.
Yep.
And that would be the best scenario. Like you talk about, like, you know, writing it down and everything. This would be a great game.
Yeah, you know what?
Duke and North Carolina in the championship would be unbelievable.
I was surprised that Kentucky actually has crept up too. They're at like plus 1400, but I guess I think they're in a little bit of a better bracket, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And they've looked okay.
Yep. All right, man. Well, let's move it over to football. There was a story that kind of intrigued me because we always harp on John Gruden in Oakland and about how he's basically the anti-millennial coach. You know, he's the anti-coach for the young players. Well, I saw Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona has instituted basically cell phone breaks in his meetings because he's acknowledging the I guess the electronics and the phone addiction of, you know, today's generation. My, us included, Sam, we're in that. We like to play with our smartphone and get connected and all that stuff. But I thought it was kind of interesting that he acknowledged it, right? That was like such a contrarian point of view for a head coach. Just be like, you know what, these guys, all that they're thinking about 20 minutes into a meeting is getting back on and, you know, direct messaging people and all this stuff. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I thought it was a kind of a funny story, but I think it's a good one.
I'm somewhat conflicted. I think it's down the right path. But I know he was saying, like, I give him a cell phone break every – I'm going to give him a cell phone break every 20 minutes. And I can understand that. It's more so I just have to look outside of it and see. I don't know what a normal NFL practice, I guess, how long it would be would they normally wouldn't look at their phones. I feel like if I go to a meeting, I can't pull out – if I go an hour-long meeting in person – I can't pull out my phone and look at it during the meeting, because if somebody's giving a presentation or something, now we see people and we've all been guilty of kind of, you know, maybe we get a text from, you know, our significant other or whatever. So you're checking to see what's going on, you know, on the sly. Mm-hmm. But if I'm in a meeting for an hour, they're demanding my attention for an hour. And I feel like that's a professional thing to do, is not to be playing with my phone for an hour. I feel like I might have a problem too if I can't go an hour without looking at my phone. Now, I understand where he's coming from, and I've always been pro players and players coaches and all this stuff. So I do understand where he's coming from. I guess I would just like to see, you know, how maybe some of the veterans that have been around a lot of other NFL locker rooms, how maybe they're going to take to that. So, yeah, it'll be good with the average NFL player is 25 years old. But, you know, maybe you have some 30-year-olds in there that are used to things being a certain way. I wonder if they'd rather have it at that time. I'm not sure. But I think it's a step in the right direction. And at least it's not, you know, you can't have facial hair and, you know, your shirt has to be up to your nipples tucked in. You know, I just – you know, I think it's a step in the right direction. I don't know if it's a little too far, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. So, like, going back to the business thing, I have participated in countless meetings, and one of my pet peeves has always been throughout my career. it has always been people that can't get off their phone. Like, you know, I've been in 15-minute staff meetings where everybody was on their phone and texting the whole time, or I'll be in like board meetings where, you know, like the president or like the VPs will just pull out their laptop and be replying to emails the whole time. It's like, dude, we're in company strategic meetings. We're setting the roadmap for the organization, and you can't get off your computer. You're like that important. You're sitting next to the president who's paying attention, you know, and you have to send emails. It's like, come on, man. Like, just calm down. Calm down with that stuff. And, you know, taking it to another level, you know, people that are basically going on Facebook or just like checking their text messages and stuff, you're not really even handling business. Like these NFL players, it's not like they're answering, you know, I guess to map it back to what I was saying, like if you're like the head of development at a company and you're on your computer, like maybe you're looking at like a defect and you're giving suggestions on how to like, you know, fix a defect or something like that. You know, it is still business. I don't like it because you should be paying attention to the meeting and doing what you're there to do. But I get it. The NFL players, it's not like they're putting an offensive scheme into place with their buddies on text message or anything like that, right? They're literally just taking a dick around break.
Right.
So that,
yeah, it's not like they're getting other calls like for work, like while they're in a work meeting. I mean, this is all personal or social media driven. And I guess that's where I'm kind of like, you know, at a certain point, you can't let the inmates run the asylum. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't know where a cutoff is. But, you know, and I don't know if he knows. I mean, he hasn't really been around a lot of NFL locker rooms. So I guess, you know, but I understand. I see where he's coming from. So I can't hate that fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth a try. And I think it's one of those things where you can start to make Arizona maybe a little bit more of a, if you're really thought of as a player destination. Because, hey, man, Arizona has a nice climate. I think their tax situation's okay. It's just that they've never really been able to build a consistent winner to draw free agent talent there. So maybe this can, you know, make it a little bit of a better organization for a destination for free agency and all that as well. So you never know. And then Kingsbury, so I was surprised that they made the hire, that Arizona made the hire, because he was let go from his NCAA job. But now that I'm working on, you know, I've already broken ground on the 2019 fantasy football almanac and all that, and I've started analyzing, you know, the offenses. I've actually already dug into, you know, the Texas Tech history, the play calling and all that stuff. And what surprised me was, you know, like it seemed like Kingsbury was on his way up. I mean, I'm sure they probably didn't, like maybe they were never able to beat Oklahoma or Texas, or, you know, one of these schools. Maybe you could never get over the hump of the conference. But if you looked statistically at the categories, first of all, he was the coach in charge of Pat Mahomes when Mahomes was in college. And which, by the way, is why I think there's a lot of interest in Kyler Murray with that first draft pick. Yeah, but Kingsbury, his defenses were improving, which that's not his thing. So he was like hiring the right people to get his defensive staff going, and his offenses were always good. So I was wondering why Texas Tech even let him go. And I think that Arizona, you know, is an unorthodox hiring, but I've been saying, you know, over the last year or so that the NFL offensive kind of coordinators have been depleted. You know, in terms of like coaching jobs. So I wasn't really sure. You know, if you want an offensive head coach, I wasn't really sure where you would go. So, yeah, I mean, I get the hiring now. I'm a little bit more pro-Kingsbury than I was. Are you down with the March Madness fever? Then check out The Big Podcast with Shaq on Podcast One Sportsnet. Listen to the big guy himself for the best basketball coverage of the NCAA tournament with a few laughs thrown in as well. Get the inside scoop and download the newest episodes of The Big Podcast with Shaq every Monday on Podcast One. Oh, hey, and we got this other story, the AAF thing. League might in its inaugural. I don't know how this happens, man. In the inaugural season, the league might fold.
And that one guy had to put up like $250 million to the whole league.
What an idiot.
Because they weren't going to make payroll. So one of the owners had to put up an extra $250 million.
$250 million or thou?
Yeah, no, million. Let me double check that.
No, that's crazy. That's got to be an astronomical number for the AAF. Maybe it's like $25 million. I could see that, but $250 million, that's a lot of money. That's like the NFL's only worth like $8 to $10 billion.
Yeah,
$250 million. That'd be like a decent percentage. But anyway, while you're looking that up, yeah, I don't understand. So the story for everybody out there is basically the owner or the majority owner of the AAF, the other football league that we're seeing games for, is concerned, and they might actually fold up shop after this weekend's games in their inaugural season because they don't have enough money. And one of the things that he's been looking for is support from the NFLPA so that, you know, they can basically the NFL, they can allow some of these players, you know, these younger players to participate. And it's something that Sam and I talked about a while ago, that I think the World League was awesome and I loved it. When we were talking about this AAF, like I love a football league that would be kind of like a development league for the NFL. I love the idea. I loved it when they did NFL Europe. But the reality is the NFL has kind of been down this path a couple of times, and it's never really worked for them. Making matters worse is the AAF, you know, my impression of it was that you know, they were doing some different things, and they were kind of marketing them as an alternative to the NFL. And, you know, I think when you come out of the gates, you know, not to the degree that XFL has, but when you come out of the gates as a football league and saying, hey, look, we're doing things differently, we're going to do this, this, and this, and basically saying, you know, we're going to be putting a different product out on the field, look how great we are, you're alienating the giant. You're alienating the NFL. And to me, what it has been the issue is if this guy knew that he needed NFLPA participation before the end of the first season or they would have to fold up shop, that's an awful business plan.
Right. It's crazy to me, man.
I don't understand how you do this. So here's how you would have fixed the situation before him, coming from an unemployed businessman. how you fix the situation is if you know that you only have enough burn or you only have enough capital to do 8 games, and you're really trying to pilot this for the NFL, and you're saying, hey, look, NFLPA, look how great this investment would be. Like, you don't go in with a full slate of games hoping that your angel investor of the NFLPA is going to come in and infuse, like, capital or infuse talent or whatever in the league. That's not what you do. What you do is you create a pilot league. You do, like, you have a limited release league, maybe, you know, 4 teams, maybe 8 teams or something like that. Do a quick kind of 2 or 3 games, or maybe you just do a tournament. Like a double elimination tournament or something like that, so that you can limit the amount of games, but you still have a product out there that is viewable. And if you have less games, if you make it a tournament format, you can basically have featured games on NFL Network instead of just seeing 2 teams a week or something like that. The business model was stupid. And when you get to a point where in your first year of business, you're going out of business because you're really, I mean, let's be honest with you, really they were looking for partnership for the NFL. And assumed or was hope or were hoping that they would get it, and they didn't get it. And going out like that, like they did, I don't know where this guy got his money, but he's going to lose a lot of it, and he deserves to lose a lot of it because it was dumb. What do you think, Sam?
I have the article up. Okay. So I guess he owns the Carolina Hurricanes, which that's a hockey team, yep. Correct? Mm-hmm. So he gives the AAF $250 million. Basically, he will serve as a chairman of its board of directors. He made a $250 million investment. After 2 weeks into the season, they were running short on cash. So basically, he paid to be the chairman of this league, and he's hoping that, I guess, he can line himself up with the NFL. And I don't know, man. It's crazy to me.
You know what's really weird about that?
Does he have that money?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
What's really interesting to me about that is, so the guy owns the Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Panthers, after the previous owner had all the sexual harassment stuff, got basically jettisoned from the NFL. And the Panthers were sold, I think, before the season, or maybe during or something. But they were sold to a minority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who is like a, you know, I think he's a real estate mogul or something like that. Right. But basically, the NFL was looking for somebody to take over this Carolina team. And if this guy who owns the Hurricanes, if he has that kind of capital to put up, why wasn't he just in on the bidding process for the? Maybe he was, and I just, you know, I didn't pay that much attention to it. But that's the first thing. I'm just like, what? The second thing is, like, again, I mean, you infuse $250 million of cash into a business, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, you're cash poor? What?
Yeah.
What?
I just don't understand how you start a league and don't at least have, like, a 3-year plan, you know? Like, you're already flying by your seat, like, 2 weeks into the season?
It's frightening. It's frightening, the stupidity of the whole situation. Another thing is, like, I've seen a couple of the games, and I haven't really watched a ton, but I've seen a couple of them, and I know they're playing in nice stadiums. So I imagine what they've done is they've probably spent a lot of capital on, like, you know, stadium deals and all that stuff. Yeah, play in lesser stadiums. Like, try to – I think that they should have done – and they did this a little bit, but not everywhere. I think they should have picked cities that don't have an NFL presence but have a strong – like we talked about a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago. Pick, like – Orlando is a great spot because it's a college football town, basically, and Central Florida is – I know they have the Buccaneers, but they're really a college football kind of location. You could have put a team in, like, Tuscaloosa or – You could have put team in, maybe they have one, maybe like one in San Antonio, but put the Portland, put these teams in markets that would like football in their area, but, you know, don't really have anything to root for in their city. And there are a lot of those cities around. And you can, like we said in the previous podcast, you can focus on college areas, like all throughout the SEC.
Right.
I don't know. There's no shortage of them. You know, Columbus,
yeah,
Ohio
somewhere
would be a
somewhere
great one.
In Mississippi, you know, like, yeah, you know, where you have, you know, Southern Miss, Old Miss, you know, you have all those teams. I mean, the next closest thing they have is the Saints. You know, have a, you know, a team there. And I know Memphis, you know, they have a team, but they play in this huge stadium. And I think they get a decent amount of fans, but it looks empty, like on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it just, yeah, they have Manziel. And, you know, I know they attract a good amount.
Yeah. All right, man, let's move it to the NBA. So, again, I was looking at the Bovada stuff, and, you know, Golden State is basically holding steady as the definite favorite. But I noticed that Houston is actually, the odds have decreased a little bit. And I think that's because maybe Golden State's putting a little bit more distance. And I saw Toronto is actually now the odds-on favorite to win the conference. So what do you think about that? I know Milwaukee's going through injuries, but how do you feel about the state of the affairs right now in the NBA? And you know, what are your thoughts on the playoff runs?
I think it's going to be a crazy playoffs. I think there's going to be a lot of 7-game series. There's not going to be, you know, usually we'll see some sweeps. I don't see any team sweeping any team, to be honest with you.
Wow.
I think, you know, going down the line, I just don't. The parity is, you know, so small there that, I really, you don't see just an overwhelming, you know, every night lately there's been teams and you have teams jockeying for position, you know, really fighting for it. And you'll see teams winning that, you know, normally, you know, you wouldn't put over it. And San Antonio's right. Made this big push. You know, in the West, everywhere from 3 to 8 is like a game, you know, so it's like you really like it's going to come down. You know, you don't have these games like at the end of the year where you have some of these teams like resting guys and just kind of coasting. No team is doing that right now. I think Milwaukee will do that, like maybe the last couple games once they've shored up like home court advantage or whatever. But you know, pretty much all these other teams have to keep fighting because you lose one or two games and it's going to jockey your position for home court and for, you know, playoff seating.
Another team that's been rising up in the Bovada odds is Philadelphia, which, you know, I think maybe again, that maybe has more to do with the injuries situation in Milwaukee. You know, I found that interesting. Then Boston is starting to fall off a cliff. I know they went on a losing streak this past week as well. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I at this point, I can say I'm going to hang with it. I'm going to stay with it. But I can say that I don't think Boston's going to beat Golden State in the finals as predicted before this season. But what do you think about Boston, man? Are they falling off a cliff? Do you think Kyrie's gone there?
I don't. You know, they're such a weird team. That when they're playing and they're on and they can get stuff out of Gordon Hayward, they're easily one of the three best teams in the league. But when they're off, I mean, they look like an eighth seed, you know, an eighth seed. They just don't look that sharp, which is kind of rare to see from a Brad Stevens team to see them kind of unorganized and kind of scatterbrained. But when they're on, and they look like a well-oiled machine, like a Brad Stevens team. So it's just going to be really interesting how this all fades out. I don't know what Kyrie's going to do. I don't think anyone knows Kyrie's going to do. I don't think Kyrie knows what he's going to do. I think it all depends on how all this stuff shakes out and what happens going forward.
Well, I know what Kyrie's going to not do. He's not going to fly over the Arctic and get to a different country because the world is not round as far as Kyrie.
Such a hater.
Have you ever watched? Speaking of like the world is flat, the flat earthers, quote unquote. Have you seen that documentary yet on Netflix?
No.
I can't remember. So there is one. There's I guess a guy who's basically the de facto leader of this movement.
Okay.
At least on, you know, at least on social media. I guess he's really well known in the circles. I can't remember his name. You can tell how much I care about this guy, but
yeah.
But I watch because, you know, I see it, and it was like Netflix documentary, The Flat Earthers, and you know, I know that I always make fun of Kyrie on the show for it. So I thought, ooh, okay, let me go watch the first couple minutes of the show. And the dude is like, you know, it's total meatball stuff. It's like, you know, how come, you know, if I look from here to the end of the street, I can't see curvature of the earth. It's like these kind of arguments, these stupid things, right? And yeah. So one of the arguments that he made, I was talking with somebody recently about this, maybe at a wedding or something. I was like talking because somebody had seen it. And that one of the arguments the guy makes, and part of his conspiracy theory, is that that the idea that the you know, the aviation authority that mm-hmm. says that you know, if you're going to basically be flying from like South Africa to Australia, you have to fly in the South Pacific mm-hmm. or the South Indian Ocean. And or maybe if you're flying from like Argentina to Australia, you're flying in the South Pacific at that point. And the guy's like, you know, oh, you know, I should be able to monitor the flight path, and I should be seeing somebody in the South Pacific, you know, flying over, but you never see any planes down there. It's a big government conspiracy. By the way, I don't know why this is a conspiracy. Like, what is the government? How are they profiting from this so-called conspiracy? Gravity. They've made up gravity. How are they profiting from this? How are they monetizing this thing? So anyway,
I don't know, man, you know.
So they had, you know, and this is a documentary, so it's not like a marketing thing. So then they had the other side of it, which is, you know, the rational people out there. And they get to like a physicist, you know, and she's like, okay. And she looks at the thing that this guy was looking at that tracks all the flights, and he claims that nothing goes in the South Pacific. And so she goes on the website, and she tracks it, and there's like four planes in the South Pacific. She's like, you know, within like 2 minutes, you see all these planes pop up. She's like, this is, you know, this is research that everybody can do from their computer. It's not hard. Anyway, that was right. a little flat earth people are kooky kind of segment.
They are kooky, man. Kooky. And a lot of these conspiracy theories or Bigfoot theories are a little kooky.
What's crazy to me is that they're getting more traction now. Because like everybody on the social media, we talk about this from time to time. Everybody on social media, they're just trying to find a club to belong to. And right. like, you know, they just, all they want to hear is what they want to hear. And so like you get like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that are in this flat earth club. It's like drop an apple. Like Isaac Newton figured this out a long time ago, guys. Gravity. That's right. That's how it works.
And normally these alien ones are really strange. But me and the basket weaver, we did see a UFO one mm-hmm. night. And that's still makes my hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Yeah, tell the story because I have a theory on the story. Why don't you tell the story just real quick?
No, and I was not drunk. I had a few beers before dinner, but then we went and saw The Revenant, late night movie, maybe 10 o'clock movie. We got out around 1. Mm. It's a long movie. We're walking out to the car. You know, it was cold out. But we're walking to the car. There's maybe like there's not many cars in the parking lot because obviously it's a 1 o'clock movie. Walking out, there's a couple other people that were watching the movie too. Walking out, this thing flies like not right above us, maybe 300 yards over our head. Circular thing, lights all underneath it. And then by the time like any of like we all were looking at it, by the time we could like do anything, it was gone, like zipped off. And all of us just looked at each other and was like, what the fuck? You know,
yeah.
What was that? And we literally all just stood there for 5 minutes. Like we couldn't move. Like it was so weird. And I'm not saying it's an alien, but it definitely was a disc-like thing with, you know, with lights underneath. And I drove home like shaking the whole way. It was just so like it's such an adrenaline rush. And, you know, the basket weaver, he's not one to make up a story, but, you know, he will completely tell you that happened.
Well, here's my theory on this is where you live, you're fairly close to a government contracted, government contracted like conglomerate, like a huge one. And like, I know what it is, but I don't want to say it because I don't want people to know about your proximity and all that, but you're close to something like that, like a research and, you know, facility that would create this thing. So I think what you saw was, because I believe that you saw it, because you don't make stuff up. But I believe what you saw was like a super drone with like crazy acceleration. And they were probably just like taking it for a test spin in the middle.
No, man, the thing was huge. It was not a drone. It was huge.
Like, how big do you think it would be in terms of like feet or yards or something, like point to point?
Probably 25 to 40 yards. It was
pretty big.
It was big. It was not, it was, you know, and it was not a small drone. It was huge, like comparative, you know, and it was over. Yeah, it could even been bigger than that, but it was definitely, this thing was gone. Like
cloaking device.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I wish I was there, man. I wish I was there. So
I wish you were there too. I wish you were too.
Yeah. I believe that you saw it. I don't think it was an alien, but I believe that you saw it, whatever it was. the idea, not to make this a science podcast, but the idea, I believe that wholeheartedly that there is other intelligent life out there. I believe that there's life as intelligent as humans or more intelligent than humans out there. But the distance that you have to travel from even planet to planet is huge. But when you're talking about galaxy to galaxy, you have to basically be traveling at past the speed of light, which if you listen to physicists, they say is impossible. Like, you basically have to have a living space station alive for years to be able to get through things. So I don't think aliens will ever get here. I think it's far more likely in theory that time travel would happen, like wormhole stuff would happen before anybody would ever get here. The distance is so big, it's unfathomable. They're like, there's no unit of measurement that can make us comprehend how large and vast the space is. So there's just no way. There's no way. Unless there's, a wormhole. I guess that's possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, I watch a lot of science documentaries. Not flat earth documentaries, but science documentaries. Stuff that acknowledges things like gravity and math.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, quickly to kind of wrap up the episode, I saw that Booker and Phoenix, one of the all-time stupid ESPN stats, he's the first player in history to score 50 points while being on a team that lost by 30. So yeah. Congratulations for him, and congratulations for ESPN for continuing to pull this BS out of their butts and making articles out of it. Jason Kidd to the Lakers, if and when they fire, Luke Walton. Do you think that Jason Kidd is a good fit for that team?
I mean, they want to go flashy, so yeah, probably. Players like playing for him, so I would say yes, that's a good fit.
I don't know, man. I'm on the fence.
Who else is out? Who else is out?
Yeah, that's the point, right? Who else is out there?
You're going to get a retread.
Yeah,
Jason Kidd was a good coach with the Knicks. Was a good coach with the Nets.
Right. Yeah.
And then was a good coach with the
Bucks.
With the Bucks. And I think he'd be a good coach with the Lakers. Him and LeBron are tight, so I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, I think having like a Hall of Fame all-time player to coach LeBron, I think that'll help from a personality standpoint. But that's really what I was curious about is if you thought that Kidd was, because he's had two jobs already. Do you think he's a good enough coach to get it done?
I don't know. I just don't know what their expectations are. The expectations for them are a little lofty. I mean, I think if they can be competitive, I think that helps. You know, I think young players, they still know who Jason Kidd is. I feel like it's a help. You know, much more than a Brian Shaw or anybody else they would try to bring in. I don't know. You know. I also don't know what the Lakers are really doing. So, you know, you might as well just throw in a flashy name in there.
Yep. I hear you.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, let's leave it there. You are going to Costa Rica. Tell me, man, what are you going to do activities wise? You just going to lay around? You going to do some surfing?
No, man. I got no surfing because we're staying out.
Oh, that's right. You're more in the rainforest area, right?
Yeah. Staying out by the volcano rainforest area. So, hiking, doing whitewater rafting, some waterfall cave diving, doing ATVs, and that's about it. There's like 2 days of chill time.
Do you know how heavy those rapids are? Like, are they
three fours?
Three and fours? Okay, that's not bad. And they're natural, right? You're not on
it's natural. So,
man, those fours in the natural world are wild. You and I, we've been on courses and like, you know, I love rafting. It's cool, man. Just don't fall out.
Yeah, I got you, man. they cut fresh fruit for you too. So,
ooh, I like that fresh fruit. Yeah, maybe it's a little papaya action, maybe an avocado.
A little papaya, some pineapple, some watermelon. Yeah, brother.
All right, man. Hey, man, get it. I'm jealous. I'd love to be going on vacation there.
That's all right. Hopefully I'll see you when I get back.
Yeah, I'll see you. There's a couple of days overlap of me being there. But just to remind everybody, next week Brad will be subbing in on Functional Sportsaholic while Sam is having fresh papaya whilst whitewater rafting.
That's it.
All right, everybody. Hey, go out. Be good. Be good to each other. If you have a job, I am available. So find me on LinkedIn. I'm Sean Ryan. I'm just going to be kind of chilling, man. I'm going to be... you know, chilling out with spider monkeys like Hansel from Zoolander, just figuring out.
Sunbathing.
Yeah, there you go, man. Just living life to its fullest. I haven't had a good quality vacation in a while, so I'm going to use this opportunity.
As you should.
As I should. All right, everybody. Hey, go out. Be good to each other and talk to you. Talk to see you, Sam, in about 2 weeks. Talk to everybody next week.
Be good.
Be good.